Today on the Rise of the Challenge podcast.
I started to be referenced to like some guys in like boy bands, like Backstreet Boys or NSYNC. And so that wasn't the best thing for me because then I started to draw into that sort of archetype, you know, and try to emulate my look around their look and everything. And in the process, man, I'm just being fully transparent. In the process, I got caught up with their look, not my look.
Welcome to the Rise of the Challenge podcast. Joining today, he's a former natural competitive bodybuilder and business owner. It's Justin Groth. How are you doing today, Justin?
I'm doing good, Alex. Thanks for having me, bud.
We're so excited to have you on the show to talk about your rise to the challenge. What we'd like to do with all of our guests is go right to the beginning. Talk about where you're from and what you like doing growing up.
So I'm from the Central Coast of California. So for context, people that are unaware where that is, that's basically right in the middle of between San Francisco and Los Angeles. Grew up here, bounced around the cities, but basically I've been in the Central Coast for my entire life. I moved probably once out of that entire 39 years of living here. And I moved to LA for, I don't know, 5 or 6 months to pursue personal training. And, but I came right back because this place, you just can't beat the weather. You can't beat the community and just overall, just good people. So my heart's here. It's anchored here unless I get a calling to move elsewhere, you know?
Growing up in California, were you that person that was going to the beach, which is the outdoors, hiking? What was the specifically growing up that you liked doing?
So I played sports. I played baseball. And I really just kind of was a regular kid, man. Just went to school, hated school, got bad grades, chased girls and had friends and hung out. And that was really it. I mean, one thing I didn't partake in was any kind of extracurricular drug. I never drank. I never smoked. And so I'm thankful that I never got on that bandwagon, so to speak. But, you know, I just normal kid, man, everyday kid. I liked, like I said, baseball. That was my sport that I played. And then I obviously rollerbladed and did shit like that. But I mean, apart from that, it was just kind of normal growing up, or I'm sorry, upbringing rather.
Rollerblading. Was that just like roller skating at like a park or just on the sidewalk? Like, or was there something more to that? That one's the one that sticks out.
Yeah. So they call it aggressive rollerblading. So I was like doing ramps and grinding on rails and, you know, getting in trouble, going to schools and parks and grinding on their rails and their ledges and stuff like that. So, and I got hurt a lot, but I mean, that's just kind of what comes along with the territory, but it's one of the things that I enjoyed. I enjoyed out of the two, like skateboarding and rollerblading. I was all about the blading. So,
see, I had a skateboard and a scooter, and I'm like, I preferred the scooter route, the Razor scooter, and trying to jump and then make the board part just spin, and I'm just falling all over the place.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I'm so uncoordinated when it comes to that part. Like any other sport, I'm fine. But scootering, I don't know why, but did that kind of have like that daredevil in you when you're going on the ramps doing tricks and stuff, or...
Yeah, you know, I think so. There was an element of like a challenge, you know, and there was also the element of you don't know if you're going to make it. And I think that even though I was obviously as a kid, I was scared of that. I did this shit anyways. And I don't know why. I gravitated towards that. And you're mentioning scooters and all that. That was before, or that was after my day, bro. I mean, I'm 39. Scooters didn't come out until, I don't know, like what, the probably 2000s or 2010 or something. Yeah. I don't know. Scooters were not my day. It was you either skated or you rollerbladed. It was one of the two. And skateboarding to me seemed too hard. I wasn't coordinated to control the board enough, you know?
With baseball, what did it teach you about yourself? Was there a certain things, athleticism, a skill from teamwork, anything like that that really stuck out to you?
Yeah, so baseball, I kind of was thrown in that sport. I was thrown into a lot of sports when I was a kid from my parents, and baseball was the only thing that I kind of liked, I kind of was good at. But even baseball, I never was on the MVP league. I was never a part of an all-star team. And so I wasn't clearly that good, but I did like the sport. I did play it enough to where I had somewhat of a liking towards it. And it wasn't like, I didn't look at it with disdain in my eyes or anything. I just was like, out of the few that I've tried, I like this the best. And, but it was sports, one of those things where I would just, even the teamwork aspect, like I wasn't about the team, so to speak. I was about, I was trying to control myself, I think, more often than trying to latch onto a team effort, you know. And even with that, I still didn't, like, baseball didn't draw out of me anything really that, like, I was never practicing more than I needed to. I never would show up early to games. I never would stay late at practices. You know, I cared more about the uniform and the snacks at the end. You know, it was more like that. And, you know, but, you know, when I found bodybuilding, it was a totally different identity placement. You know, nobody would have to tell me, hey, man, you got to go train X amount of days a week. Like, I just was there at the gym training my ass off. And that's something that, you know, once I found bodybuilding, we can talk more about that if you'd like. But once I found that sport, that was all lights were on. Everything was a go. I didn't have to have any kind of motivation. It was just there, you know?
Well, it's interesting. You talked about how you were more passionate about the solo journey aspect of it than the team aspect, and that how bodybuilding brings out the solo individuality of that competitor. But before we get into that, we're usually asked that dream job of ours. As you're growing up, what was that dream job that you were always wanting to pursue?
Dude, I don't think I had one, man. I mean, I'm trying to think back, and I don't really think I had one particular job that I don't even know if I looked at life as having a job. I think I looked at life even from a young age, like I need to create myself. And I don't know what that looks like, but I come from an entrepreneurial family, and they had a lot of bearing on the direction of my life and the direction of, you know, maybe what I should do. And I never looked at attaining a job as a means to an end. I looked at attaining an identity and creating myself as a means to my future and my legacy. And I never would have articulated like that when I was 10, 11, 12, 16 years old, but that's what my mind was focused around. I'm articulating it that way at 39 because I can understand a little bit more of who I was as a youth and that, you know, premature mindset, you know, but that's what it evolved into. And that's what it was in its infancy when I was younger. It just hadn't evolved yet, but that's how I looked at my future. I looked at my future as, what am I going to do to create myself? And more respectively, what am I going to do to emulate my father? Because my father was my biggest and still is my biggest role model and is my only role model. I don't look up to anybody else and I never will. That's my role model forever. And so I looked at more like him, like, how do I emulate that or even come halfway to the man that he is? And that was the burden of performance on me. If anything,
did you want to go in that similar path as an entrepreneur and kind of, or go right into the workforce? Did you go through the education? Did you start getting really into fitness at this time?
Yeah. So I didn't go into the workforce. I got a job just because that was what you're supposed to do in summer, you know, during your 16, 17, 18 year old days. And I got a job just because, you know, I was, all my friends had jobs and, you know, I needed extra money. So I needed gas money for my truck. And so I got jobs just to support that, but I never kept a job longer than 2 or 3 months. Wow. And I'm a horrible employee, and not because I don't take well to authority, but because it just wasn't like, I was very much not concerned with bettering their business. I was just concerned with doing what was the bare minimum to get by, to end my shift so I could get off work and go do whatever I wanted. You know what I mean? And I wasn't a good employee for many reasons, but that was one of them. And on top of that, during high school, my high school year, sophomore to senior, I had a side business that I created for hustling basically affordable parts and installing lift kits and selling Wilson tires and everything. I got really into that because I was into the lifted trucks, and that was a hot commodity when I was younger in my high school days. And people were all into lifted trucks and doing lift kits and wheels and tires and accessories to their trucks. And so I got into doing that and had a wholesale license and had a business for it. And I was selling truck parts and installing lift kits on the weekends with my buddy. And so that was my first really foot forward into the entrepreneurial space. But I mean, you don't do that. And when you're a kid, you don't have more of an affinity to do that than a secure paycheck if you're not an entrepreneur at heart. Mm-hmm. So I always knew I was an entrepreneur at heart, which again just coincides with me trying to create that man that I'm supposed to be for my future.
How long did that side hustle last, or is it still going today?
Yeah, no, because it's not going today, obviously, because trucks are, it was a trend. It was a, you know, it was a fad that existed for a while. I mean, people still live trucks and do all that sort of thing, but it's not like it once was. And it's not as prevalent as it once was, probably due to gas prices and shit like that, you know. But back then it was more of like it was a hobby. It was an affinity. It was something that I had a passion for, and it lasted for probably 5 years or so. I mean, I did it well into college. But then after college, you know, seasons change, mindset shifts, and you just start to develop a liking or affinity towards other things. And then that's really when bodybuilding came into the picture. And I put a lot of my attention and focus on becoming a great competitor in the bodybuilding world.
When did you start thinking, I want to get into bodybuilding? Is there a certain moment that when you're training or working out and stuff, they're like, I want to try and go after this path?
I don't have the story that most bodybuilders have, which is they looked in the muscle mags and they saw guys and they're like, I want to look like that. That's not my fucking story. My story is I came from a position of identity crisis, not knowing what I wanted to look like, knowing that, like, I want to, I guess, like every man, we want girls. And when you have this, I guess in high school, girls are everything. Girls and your truck and your car is like everything, you know? And I wanted that. I wanted more girls. I wanted more of that attention, right? And in high school, I was a normal kid. I was into my looks, but I was just a normal body kid. Like, I was 165 pounds, 170 pounds, and I'm 5'11". For context here. So I was just a normal kid. I wasn't fat. I wasn't skinny. I was just normal. And I started to be referenced to like some guys in like boy bands, like Backstreet Boys or NSYNC. And so that wasn't the best thing for me, because then I started to draw into that sort of archetype, you know, and try to emulate my look around their look and everything. And in the process, man, I'm just being fully transparent. In the process, I got caught up with their look, not my look. And so what happened was I noticed that, like, my cheeks, I thought my cheeks were too chubby. So I was like, I want to lose weight in my face. How do I do that? Well, I just run a lot and I won't eat. Oh. So when that happened, I got down to a body weight of like 136 pounds of my lowest. And I was at a point where I was unhealthy looking. I was sickly looking, to be honest, man. I was clinically anorexic. And I told my family at the time, I said, look, I need help out of this. I already know that I'm not going to fix this, because unless it gets to the point where it's very, very detrimental to my health, or like I can't move, I'm not going to resurrect this. I need help. And so they lined me up with a nutritionist and my mother's personal trainer at the time. So that kind of opened the gateway to fitness for me. And lo and behold, things started moving in the opposite trajectory. And then I started to like the fact that I was gaining a shape to my body and putting muscle on and wasn't putting on too much fat in the process. And I started to realize that I love doing this. And that was slowly started to pick up the identity transformation for me. And I started to look more muscular. And that's one thing that those guys didn't have. Any guy in Backstreet Boys or anything, they weren't muscular physiques. They weren't nothing like that. So that was like something where I could break apart from my, from that, you know, once identity that I was called to from other people to now my own. And when I started coming into my own, well, then I began to have a authority and influence over myself that I didn't have prior. And then that led to me, obviously competitive bodybuilding and then becoming a personal trainer, because people would start asking me, hey man, what do you do that for? What's this good for? What kind of supplements do you take? And can you check my form on this exercise? And look, I just realized, Alex, that I love to pour into people with fitness. And I listened to that. I listened to that feeling that I got when I poured into people what I knew and what was what I had learned throughout the years. And I started a business off of it, man. I mean, I couldn't help but chase that fulfilling feeling of pouring into people. So that's what led to the business aspect of things.
Something I mentioned at the very beginning was natural competitive bodybuilder. And that's always the kind of the stereotypes is, oh, they're taking something. Oh, they're using enhancements and stuff. What was so passionate about you to go the natural route? And was there ever the temptation to kind of go into the direction of enhancement drugs?
No. So I've never taken drugs my entire life, dude. Even throughout high school and college, I never fell prey to any of the, you know, alcohol, getting drunk, getting high. I've never been drunk, never been high. I've never taken any kind of substances or any kind of anything like that apart from caffeine. I wanted to continue my streak, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So I look at it like that. It's like a streak that I've kept for this amount of time. I'm not going to break it just because I'm doing bodybuilding. And honestly, I have a moral disposition with anything drug related. I mean, obviously, if you want to be pedantic and say, well, if that's your case, then you would never take caffeine because caffeine is a drug, or Tylenol is a drug, ibuprofen is a drug. Yeah, I get it, dude. But we're being really pedantic here if we start to narrow it down to over-the-counter drugs. I'm talking about pharmacological man-made agents that are made in the lab that are specifically designed to make you more muscular without the aid of you doing anything different than what you're doing currently. And that to me is not fair. That to me is something that you didn't do. You can't be rewarded by that because you didn't achieve that on your own accord. That's something that was given to you from something that you ingested or injected. And to me, I have a prejudice against that. And that's not something that I pedestalize or reward. So I don't think it should be rewarded, but that's my opinion, dude. And I decided to have my best hand at this natural bodybuilding thing, which basically just means I don't take drugs. The only thing I take is anything that's over the counter you can buy at Walmart or your local NutriShop. And that's something that I stood by. And I was able to develop a physique in the process, and I was able to win trophies in the process. Sure, could I have done much better if I had taken drugs? Absolutely. But one thing I wouldn't have is I wouldn't be able to have the title of natural bodybuilder and be able to say to somebody, look, this is attainable for you naturally if you have XYZ. XYZ is discipline, obsession, and structure. If you have all those things, then you can get to this body and you have consistency to boot. You have all those things at play, you can attain this, because I'm not somebody who has elite level genetics. I have regular genetics. I have regular to good genetics. And I was able to build this body based on work ethic, discipline, and a relentless, undying need to be my best. So it's attainable. And that's something that I want to be more of a voice for people that look up to and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with looking to the guys that are on the Olympia stage or Arnold stage, but then again, you're looking into a falsehood of what it looks like to become a bodybuilder, you know, and they're not going to show you all of the things behind the red curtain, so to speak.
I think you hit it right on the nose. Is there's so many people out there sharing their way of doing it, and you don't know what they're doing behind the scenes. They might be doing it, but they're not going to say it because then they lose credibility and they will lose followers or customers or clients and things like that. So you being a voice for it's so amazing because you stuck to your mission statement on what you wanted to achieve and how you were going to achieve it. Was there a competition that is a memorable one for you, that one sticks out that you're so proud of?
There's a couple. That one was one that I brought my best conditioning in and I got third place at it. And that was a highlighted one for me because one of my buddies, one of my close buddies was competing in that competition. And so I got to kind of compete alongside him, even though we were in different classes. It was really fun. I brought my best package ever. Even though I got third, I looked my best. And I'm just very proud of that because it took me a few shows to even get to that point where I looked my best, you know? And then another one was one that I got probably dead last in. And it was one that humbled me because I realized that there's other people that are just going to smoke you. And it's even more of a reason to be better and to do better because you know that there are people out there that are better than you. But here's the thing. We're not playing apples to apples here. I was competing in federations that were sanctioned under the pretense of you didn't have to be natural. Like it wasn't a hard, stringent line of, well, we're only taking natural competitors here. There wasn't drug tested. It wasn't none of that. So it was these federations that I was going into, I knew I was competing against guys that were enhanced. But the reason why I competed against these guys that were enhanced was because all the natural federations were all Midwest. So I would have to travel to like Illinois or Indiana to do these shows that were tested shows. I wasn't going to do that. I wasn't going to travel in an airplane, you know, hours and hours away and make it a bigger ordeal than it already was. So that's why I went close to home, which was in LA or San Francisco, and competed in these shows that were otherwise and, you know, untested. And so it was a traveling issue for me. And I just played my hand and did my best I could against those guys, knowing that I'm walking into an arena that is filled with guys that are likely all of them doing some type of gear. And, I mean, it was my choice to not do that, you know, and it's not any shade on them. It's really, I'm the one that's the minority there, you know? And so, but it was just important to me it was important to me and my parents, because my mom was the one that was like she was my tanner. She was my scheduler. She was my assistant. Basically, I didn't have anybody else at the time. So I wasn't going to make her travel all the way to Midwest, just because those were natural tested shows. Fuck it. I'm going to try my best against these people that are enhanced and see what I can come out with. And I mean, as a result, I was blessed to do really well. I mean, I have a slew of trophies in a case right now that I can give to my kids when I have kids one day and tell them that this is what their daddy did. And that's important to me, you know?
With the bodybuilding competition world, it takes a lot of time and the schedule, the strict phases and things like that. Comparing it to that being your professional world, how did that play an effect in your personal world? Were you able to be yourself and go out and do the things you want to do, hang out with family and friends while still being strict in what your performance needed to be?
Yes and no. I mean, I can remember times where when I was around 21, 22, where I was first getting into the bar scene, you know, because up 21, I could go out to the bars and go out in that social arena. And I remember I would take egg whites and almonds with me, carton of egg whites. And I would, every 2 hours, I would leave the bar and I would go to my truck and I would down a carton of egg whites and eat like a handful of almonds, chug down some water, and I go back to the bars and hang out with my friends. And all my friends knew I did this, but you know, that's just one thing those are things you have to do if you want to be your best. If you want to, you know, live on top of staying on structure, you have to do those things. You have to sacrifice. And there were times where I did have to fully sacrifice, where I couldn't go to parties. I couldn't go to outings or events because I knew that I'd be tempted by food. And it was during a time of preparation. I was getting ready for a contest. And I knew I just didn't want to be around that shit because also I'm not a healthy person to be around when I'm, you know, severely deficient in calories and I'm trying to get sub 6% body fat. I'm not a nice person to be around. And I don't want to put that on anybody else. So I just would stay away from the parties. I'd stay away from the outings because I'm not going to be a good time. I can't eat any food. It's going to piss me off even further. And so I'm just like, no, nah, I'm just not going to go. I'll just stay home and, or maybe just peruse the grocery store and look at all the foods on the aisles that I can't eat that I'm going to make a mental note of eating after the contest, you know? But that was like, that sort of thing was the thing that I did, you know? I mean, you definitely have to make sacrifices and absolve yourself from certain situations if you want to be your best. But that's what it comes, that's what it boils down. Most people aren't willing to do that, man, with anything in their life. Not just with bodybuilding or the endeavor of bodybuilding, but like building a business or anything. I mean, they're just not willing to sacrifice. They want things now. They want instant gratification. And I mean, something of measure or meaning typically doesn't come without sacrifice.
I think a lot of people with health and fitness, they just want a snap of the fingers and, oh, they're at their golden weight. They're at their golden look and everything, where it doesn't happen overnight and it takes time. And I feel more rewarded looking at the journey I've been on. As much as I wanted to it happen overnight, I'm proud of the sacrifices I've made, but still enjoying the journey that I've been on. I think we've seen all those fun videos on what bodybuilders ate after a show. You have tons of glazed donuts. What was that fun food you finally got to eat after a show?
So my big go-to was Cheesecake Factory. I love Cheesecake Factory. And I would get at least three entrees. I'd get four or five cheesecakes at the end. Yeah, it was, I don't eat small. I don't just have a burger and a milkshake, you know?
I don't know how you could eat all that. But then again, bodybuilders are a breed of competitors.
Yeah, dude, it's just, I mean, people sometimes get sick, but I was lucky that I never got sick, man. I mean, unless I got food poisoning, but if it was just a matter of food consumption, I could eat a lot and not do anything in my stomach, even from months of dieting prior to that.
And then the next day you're back in the gym training even more to wear off that cheesecake
factor. Yeah, exactly.
I can only imagine that table and all that food coming, and then you have to see the bill right after it, but just imagine all that food, and it's just mind-blowing that you can eat that right after the competition.
You want it. You're not even, and the bill, the money, who gives a shit? I'll spend like $1,000 on that food just because it's the experience that I'm indulging in, you know?
What's been the biggest transition from going from bodybuilding training to what you currently do? Are you going with that same kind of mindset on exercises and eating, or are you doing a different approach where you can still have that look that you want, but still enjoy the training aspect of it?
So in short, nothing's really changed. Everything has just become a little bit different in the regard of, you know, my body fat percentage pre-show was anywhere from, sorry about that. And my bodybuilding competition percentage for my body fat was around 4 to 6%. And, you know, right now it's hovering between 11 and 12%. So I eat a little bit more foods, obviously. I don't diet, but I would say I maintain caloric intake, whereas before I would be in a deficit and I would be getting really, really super lean for a purpose in mind, you know? My training doesn't change. My training is still very hard because I've now cemented in these behaviors that when I enter the gym, when I go into the workout, I'm training. I'm still training with a purpose in mind, but it's because of what I've been already through with my bodybuilding past. That's sort of substantiated these behaviors. And these are what I lead every day in my training with. So it's, even though I'm not competing, I still train like I'm competing. I still go through every single rep and exercise with intention behind each and every rep. and with the goal in mind to be better. Even if I don't get better, that's the goal in mind, just to be better. So the behaviors are still the same. The habits are still the same. The foods have, I've obviously, my foods have gone up a little bit, but I still eat the same, predominantly the same type of foods, you know, your steak, your rice, your veggies, protein shakes, things like that. I have candy in the morning now for breakfast. That's a major thing. I have Reese's, either a fast break or Nutrageous, a king size bar in the morning. And that's typically right before I train. And I just love Reese's. So I have that in my diet every single day. And I'm better because of it.
I think that would be the one thing I would not expect you to say is I have Reese's in the morning. I think people would, that's going to shock people when they hear this, is that's what you eat. But hey, everyone has their strategy and what they do. So if it works for you,
that's yeah, man. Yeah. The proof is in the pudding, right? So if I'm a fat piece of shit and I eat Reese's, well, you can obviously say, hey, there's something wrong with that diet model, but that's not the case here. So Reese's are something that make me happy in the morning. Like I look forward to eating it. I eat that with a couple of protein drinks and my pre-workout, and then I'm off to train. And I come back, have a couple more protein drinks. And then at nighttime I have a big steak, right? White rice and veggies and some berries. And then that's pretty much my diet model.
When you're working, you kind of mentioned that you enjoy the process of helping others when it comes to health and fitness. What is the biggest things you make sure to tell clients you're working with, people that you work with in the gym, in their journey to hopefully have them achieve what their goals are?
Be real with them. So if they have outlandish goals in outlandish timeframes, then I quickly put a pin in that bubble, because I want to make sure that they understand that I never want to misguide somebody, and I never want somebody to have an understanding that's not aligned with what their goals are. I want them to have an understanding, but I want them to know the good and the bad. And I want them to know that that exists throughout any kind of quest that they're after or becoming better. It is what it just is that. And so if somebody has these outlandish goals that I know are unrealistic in nature and in terms of the timeline, then I let them know that. And a lot of the times they respect it. I mean, they respect it, and they just kind of, even though it's a big pill to swallow, they still swallow it. I've never really had anybody be like, well, that's just crazy. Well, no, I don't believe that. And then walk away. You know, that's never been the case. Maybe because of the way that I frame it and articulate the words, but I always want people to understand contextually what this is going to look like. But the first things first is I want them to understand that they just take one day at a time with this. They can't look at the overarching goal as the shiny red, as the shiny object to look to and to chase after. The day is the shiny object. Every single day is that shiny object that they have to chase after and just do their best in that day. And what happens is obviously the compounding effect of the matter. Like, you rack up so many days that this just, the compounding effect that happens after racking up so many days ends up lending itself to a favorable hand. And that favorable hand is typically a body transformation and then a mindset transformation to boot as well. So being realistic is a main concern for me over people that meet with me and we go over their fitness goals, etc.
With the journey that you've been on, is there anything in the next chapter of your journey that you're hoping to achieve or looking forward towards?
So, and we're in the process of building the Elite Trainer Academy, which is essentially building trainers to be better, elite level. And that's a big focus of mine, because I see a lot of trainers in local gyms that I attend, and they're just not what they could be. And I understand why people get into training. I understand why people start personal training. And I understand that the grind of training is something that nobody tells people about, or nobody gives a real realistic view of what it's going to look like when they become a personal trainer in put all this money into a certificate, etc. And so my goal from here on out, not just building people up, but building trainers up to be their best. And I have a real big, there's a real big a place of importance that I put on that, because it's something that I would have wanted to have when I was coming up as a trainer, but there was nobody that offered it. And I mean, maybe there were, but I just wasn't, I never saw it, wasn't understanding of it. And this is something that I think is really, really important for trainers to understand, or to rather to have as a, almost like a tool in their toolkit. It's, they need coaching, they need training from an actual trainer that's done it, that's been successful doing it, that understands psychology, that understands what to look for in terms of social cues, psychological cues within people, not only based on their body English, but just their eye language, their facial expressions, the kinds of words that they use, how they choose to word things. I mean, linguistics to some degree, you know, I mean, this is very, very important when you're dealing with the populace around you. And if you want to be your best and have your best foot forward with not only attracting, but retaining clientele, then you'll understand the importance of these elements here. And it's something that I'm very, very immersed in. And I want to continuously refine and cultivate in terms of a new business.
When you're not training, what else do you like to do for fun? Something that maybe people don't know that you like to do. I mean, we already know that you eat Reese's in the morning, so I...
Eat? That's it. My biggest joy, man, is having cheat meals. So I have a cheat meal every Sunday. I have a small cheat meal on Fridays. The cheat meal on Sundays, I mean, you can ask my lady. I look forward to it. And I'm getting linked up with what restaurants I want to go to, like on Tuesday or Wednesday. And I look forward to it. That's also a past behavior of mine that I had from competing, my competitive days. You know, I would look so forward to these meals. And it, you know, most people would say, well, that's dysfunctional that you play yourself around food to such a large degree. But look, man, I mean, if I'm going to have advice, it would be that it's better that than drugs or alcohol, right?
Yeah. Do you like to go to like local places or the hot spots in your area when it comes to those Sunday meals?
I am a creature of habit. So, I mean, I really frequent the same places over and over again. It depends on the food that they're serving. If they just open up and they're known for like burgers or something or pizza, because I like those two foods, then I'll 9 times out of 10, I'll go try them out, man. But I also, before that, I'm looking up Yelp reviews. I'm looking, you know, I'm doing my research on them beforehand.
The final question I'll ask you, for someone that's listening to this interview based on your journey and experience, what tips or advice would you give them to overcome obstacles, accomplish their goals, and rise to the challenge?
The best advice I could give you is you just can't stop. You just don't stop. And you have to do things with intent behind them, with work ethic, and you focus on the disciplinary aspect over the motivational aspect. But there's really no magic recipe to this. You just can't stop.
Justin, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show and talking about your rise to the challenge. You're inspiring so many people, and we are excited to see what the future looks like for you.
Thanks, Alex. I appreciate you having me, bud.
See you next time. Remember to follow, subscribe, and all the other podcasts. Make sure to subscribe to our YouTube.